from that moment on. It was spring, and it was such a treat to me that I couldn't get it out of my mind, which is what happens when you read a poem that you really love. And I did something that was most unusual for me. I looked at the poet, looked very hard at the volume, and found that Naomi Nye, who was the poet, lived with her husband in Texas, and I called information and called her up and said, I want to tell you that I'm Julie Heifetz, and I love Hugging the Jukebox. And that was a year ago, and we've talked by phone for a year, and all I can tell you is that I didn't know the half of it. It's been a real treat to have Naomi in St. Louis, to feel the spirit that lives in the poems firsthand. She read at Clayton High School today, and it was such a delight that I can't wait to sit down and hear what Naomi's going to read.
Thank you. It's a treat to be here in the city where I was born and grew up. The first street I ever lived on was McPherson, right here, after I was born. Julie Heifetz had no idea when she called and invited me of any of this, or that the fact that she'd invited me to St. Louis would cause my mother to fly in from Dallas to have reunions with her college and high school friends. And there is just no end to what a phone call can do. Thanks, Julie. I have to make a disclaimer to the poster, however. I did not graduate from Washington University. I graduated from Trinity University. My mother, however, did graduate from Washington University. It's great to be back with the red bricks. We don't have this color bricks in Texas, and it's always been a gravity that I have missed. And just being back in St. Louis makes all kinds of things come alive, feel alive again. I love this city very much. I'd like to open with a short prose poem piece that was published in the Georgia Review under fiction, but it's not fiction. It's called The Cookies for my grandmother. On Union Boulevard, St. Louis, in the 1950s, there were women in their 80s who lived with the shades drawn down, who hid like bats in the caves they claimed for home. Neighbors of my grandmother, these ones could be faintly heard through a ceiling or wall, a drawer opening, the slow thump of a shoe. Who they were and whom they were mourning, someone had always just died, intrigued me. Me, the child who knew where the cookies waited in Grandma's kitchen closet, who lined five varieties up on the table and bit from each one in succession, knowing my mother would never let me do this at home. Who sold Girl Scout cookies door to door in annual tradition, who sold 50 boxes, who won the prize. My grandmother told me which doors to knock on, whispered secretly, she'll take three boxes, wait and see. Hand in hand, we climbed the dark stairs, knocked on doors. I shivered, held Grandma tighter, remember still the smell, which was curiously fragrant, a sweet soup of talcum powder, folded curtains, roses pressed in a book. Was that what years smelled like? The door would miraculously open and a withered face be framed there, peering oddly at me as if I had come from another world. Maybe I had. Come in, it would say, or yes. And I would mumble something about cookies, feeling foolish, feeling like the one who places a can of beans next to an altar marked for the poor and then has to stare at it, the beans next to the cross, all through the worship. Feeling I should have brought more, as if I shouldn't be selling something to these women, but giving them a gift, some new breath, assurance there was still a child's world out there, green grass, scabby knees, a playground where you could stretch your legs higher than your head. There were still Easter eggs lodged in the mouths of drain pipes and sleds on frozen hills, that joyous scream of flying toward yourself in the snow. Squirrels storing nuts, kittens being born with eyes closed, there was still everything tiny, unformed, flung wide open into the air. But how did you carry such an assurance? In those hallways, standing before those thin, gray wisps of women, with Grandma slinking back, pushing me forward to go in alone, I didn't know. There was something here which also smelled like life, but it was a life I hadn't learned yet. I had never outlived anything I knew of except one yellow cat. I had never saved a photograph. For me, life was a bounce, an unending burst of pleasures. Vaguely, I imagined what a life of recollection could be, as already I was haunted by a sense of my own lost baby years, golden rings I slipped on and off my heart. Would I be one of those women? Their rooms were shrines of upholstery and lace, silent radios standing under stacks of magazines. Did they work? Could I turn the knobs? Questions I wouldn't ask here. Windows with shades pulled low, so the light peeping through took on a changed quality, as if it were brighter or dimmer than I remembered. And portraits on walls, tables, faces strangely familiar, as if I was destined to know them. I asked no questions, and the women never questioned me. Never asked where the money went, had the price gone up since last year, were there any additional flavors? They bought what they remembered. If it was peanut butter last year, peanut butter this year would be fine. They brought the coins from jars, from pocketbooks without handles, counted them carefully before me while I stared at their thin crops of knotted hair. What were these women thinking of? And the door would close softly behind me, transaction complete, the closing click like a drawer sliding back, a world slid quietly out of sight, and I was free to return to my own universe, to Grandma, standing with arms folded in the courtyard, staring peacefully up at a blue jay or sprouting leaf. Suddenly I'd see Grandma in her dress of tiny flowers, curly gray permanent, tightly laced shoes as one of them. But then she'd turn, laugh. Did she buy and again belong to me? Gray women in rooms with shades drawn. Weeks later, the cookies would come. I would stack the boxes, make my delivery rounds to the sleeping doors. This time, I would be businesslike. I would rap firmly. Hello, ma'am. Here are the cookies you ordered. And the face would peer up, uncertain. Cookies? As if for a moment we were floating in the space between us, what I did, carefully balancing boxes in both my arms, wondering who would eat the cookies. I was a rare child seen in that building then. Or what she did, reaching out with floating hands to touch what she had bought, had little to do with who we were, had been, or ever would be. This is in one other St. Louis poem. This is dedicated to David and Barbara Cluel, who are here. It's called The Brick. I first started admiring David Cluel's poems from afar, and then it turned out that he and Barbara lived on a street, which was an important street in my memory, The Brick. Each morning in the gray margin between sleep and rising, I find myself on Pershing Avenue, St. Louis, examining bricks in buildings, looking for the one I brushed with my mitten in 1956. How will I know it when I find it? A shade goes up in one window. This is where the man in the undershirt lived. Someone shakes a coffee can and turns a faucet. Water gushes out, ice cold. Why do I want this brick? What does a brick, red or otherwise, have to tell anyone about how to live a life? It's as crazy as crying for a bear you didn't get when you were three. Those little hands hopefully touching the nose, maybe they even named it fuzzy. So what could I name a brick? Hard. What buildings are made of? And why would one brick that I brushed while on a walk with my mother and father become a shrine? Later we rode a bus. My father carried a sack from a drugstore. I stared hard at the faces of shops to see what they looked like in the dark. And things went on that way for decades. Doors opening, buzzers going off, someone saying, "We're almost there." So, this has something to do with why I stare at certain buildings in any city. I don't know where the mittens went. They had a cord to keep them together. I'm sure my parents could drive down Pershing Avenue tomorrow without weeping. But it's different for me. It's the snagged edge, the center of memory, the place where I get off and on. Here's some from Hugging the Jukebox. I read at a university in eastern New Mexico, and I met some people from the east, and I asked them how they liked living in eastern New Mexico. Eastern New Mexico is the same landscape as western Texas, if any of you have ever been there, which is a very definite horizon. all horizon. Everything is horizon. And I asked these people from the East how they liked living in that kind of landscape, and they said, well, it's a little strange. And they said they would show me later what they meant. And later they took me to their home, which was at the Tumbleweeds crossroad of America, I think. I never realized tumbleweeds could be bigger than human beings, and their entire front yard was filled with these weeds. They could no longer use their front door or anything. I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was like a sculpture. And they were very seriously upset about it. So I later wrote them this poem, Et Portales, New Mexico. They spoke of tumbleweeds coming to their doors in the night, whole herds of them scooting across the desert, arriving at any place there was a wall and staying. In the morning, they would rise to find them stacked, grazing on air. Their neighbor tried fire, but his living room went up in flames. You couldn't fit a tumbleweed in a garbage sack unless it was a baby one. If you swept them across the street, they would return to you, loyal, on the next powerful gust. What did people do to protect their houses in New Mexico? At night, they dreamed eastern hedges guarded their beds, steady lamplight palming each roof. They never knew they would be planted on this thin blue line, nothing between themselves and the next town but a sign for Indian gifts. Where they grew up, a root meant something. Trees lived 100 years and bulbs slept secure in the ground. But here in the West, the days were flat tables spread with wind. You never knew who was coming, how many places to set for dinner. They had imagined a knock and opened the door for 4 big ones, rolling right up to the chairs. You never knew how far your voices would travel once you let a word out, felt that curled stem shrinking in your throat and the 1,000 directions it could or could not go. Oh, thanks. That's all right. Thanks. This is called The Lost Parrot. I had more interesting comments on the lost parrot in St. Louis today than I've ever had in San Antonio, the city in which it was written. It's interesting to go different places and hear what people will say about poems. It was written for a little boy I worked with in a school. Carlos bites the end of his pencil. He's trying to write a dream poem, but waves at me, frowning. I had a parrot. He talks slowly, like his voice travels far to get out of his body. A dream parrot? No, a real parrot. Write about it. He squirms, looks nervous, everyone else is finished, and he hasn't started. It left. What left? The parrot. He hunches over the table, pencil gripped in fist, shaping the heavy letters. Days later, we will write story poems, sound poems, but always the same subject for Carlos. It left. He will insist on reading it, and the class will look puzzled. The class is tired of this parrot. Write more, Carlos. Write more, Carlos. I can't. Why not? I don't know where it went. Each day when I leave, he stares at the ceiling. Maybe he is planning an expedition into the back streets of San Antonio, armed with nets and ripe mangoes. He will find the parrot nesting in a rain gutter. This time he will guard it carefully, make sure it stays. Before winter comes and his paper goes white in all directions, before anything else he loves gets away. This is a poem that comes from the... I remember at Central School in Ferguson, we first learned the dance, the hokey pokey. I guess that's kind of universal. You put your whole self in, you put your whole self out. It's the last verse. Whole self in and you shake it all about. That's after you've done the toe and the arm and everything. This is called the whole self. When I think of the long history of the self on its journey to becoming the whole self, I get tired. It was the kind of trip you keep making, over and over again, the bag you pack and repack so often, the shirts start folding themselves the minute you take them off. I kept detailed notes in a brown notebook. I could tell you when the arm joined, when it fell off again, when the heart found the intended socket and settled down to pumping. I could make a map of lost organs, the scrambled liver, the misplaced brain. Finally, we met up with one another on a street corner in October during the noon rush. I could tell you what I was wearing, how suddenly the face of the harried waitress made sense. I gave my order in a new voice, spoke the word vegetables like a precious code. Had one relapse at a cowboy dance in Bandera, Texas, under a sky so fat the full moon was sitting right on top of us. Give me back my villages, I moaned, the ability to touch and remove the hand without losing anything. Take me off this mountain where six counties are visible at once. I want to remember what it felt like loving by inches. You put in the whole self. I'll keep with the toe. But no, it was like telling the eye not to blink. The self held on to its perimeters, committed forever. A reunion could not be reversed. I jumped inside the ring, all of me. Danced then, and I danced till the room blurred like water, blood, dance, and I was leaning headlong into the universe. Dance. The whole self was a current, a fragile cargo, a raft someone was paddling through the jungle, and I was there, waving, and I would be there at the other end. Since there are a lot of writers here tonight, I'll read you this one. Oh, thanks. This is called The Art of Disappearing. Didn't you say, Julie, you wrote one mean poem to write a mean poem? This was my mean poem, The Art of Disappearing. When they say, don't I know you, say, no. When they invite you to the party, remember what parties are like before answering. Someone telling you in a loud voice, they once wrote a poem. Greasy sausage balls on a paper plate, then reply. If they say, we should get together, say, why? It's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees. Monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It will never be finished. When someone recognizes you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You will never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time. Thanks. I'll read some thanks. Thanks especially to Duff's, too, for having this nice series here. I've been reading, vicariously experiencing it through the poster down in Texas. All the nice things going on. I'll read a couple of more recent things. I went to teach in California last year, and they gave me the office on the Berkeley campus into which they had placed every abandoned item that had not worked on the campus in the last 25 years. And they were very apologetic about this, saying they had no other office to give me. But I loved it because I had all these broken things to look at and try to figure out how to fix them. And there was something very important about that office. And so I called this office 337 Wheeler Hall, Berkeley. I live in the room of abandoned things. Typewriters with jammed ribbons, clocks that won't wind, shelves of books inscribed to heart with respect and good wishes. Heart has moved to another building. Each day, students sit beneath my window. A boy asks a girl if her interest in him is growing. She says, no. He should come up and sit in this office a while. Here he could learn what it is to be a green vinyl chair losing its stuffing. I like this room so much, I fling the window high to let the sky in. Join me, I say. Whatever leaves us both. I open the door of my heart so the losses march out. Now when the call comes saying my tricky cat is dead, when the fuchsia blossoms make pink tombs in the grass, a question I asked years ago is being answered. Today, a gray nest fell out of a spruce at my feet. I lifted it, traced the hollow where a bird once sat, and looked up. The tree was very tall. I brought the nest to my office, circled it with eucalyptus leaves that had also fallen, fragrant grace notes. I buried my face in this shrine of knitted twigs and sang the song to all things that are gone. Tura, lura, lura, it says, you make a short time seem long. Two countries. Skin remembers how long the years grow when skin is not touched. A gray tunnel of singleness, a feather lost from the tail of one bird, drifting down onto a step, swept away by someone who never saw it was a feather. Skin ate, walked, slept by itself, knew how to raise a see you later hand. But skin felt it was never seen, never known as a land on the map, nose like a city, hip like a city, gleaming dome of the mosque and the hundred corridors of cinnamon and rope. Skin had its hope. That's what skin does. Heals over the scarred place, makes a road. Love means you breathe in two countries. And skin remembers silk, spiny grass, deep in the pocket that is skin's secret own. Even now, when skin is not alone, it remembers being alone and thanks something larger that there are travelers, that people go places larger than themselves. I appreciate tonight that people have read some poems on difficult subjects. Last year, I traveled for the U.S. Information Agency to Bangladesh, Pakistan, Jordan, and Israel, and met a great many poets, all of whom were writing on their own difficult subjects, and then later had the opportunity to host Kishvar Naheed, who's the foremost woman poet in Pakistan, in San Antonio. She came to the United States and instantly wanted to go to San Antonio, which Washington found very disarming. Why did this person have to go to San Antonio? And she came down and did all these readings, and she talked to people about, it's easy to write about many things, but don't forget to write about your most difficult subjects, too, because that's important. So thank you, Julie and Diane, for writing some very important poems. And I'll close with, how's the time doing for me? I'm fine. I'll close with read some poems here that, to me, are more difficult, have been more difficult subjects. This one is, I'm speaking to a friend in it, but also to myself. It's called Mother of Nothing. Sister, the stars have no children. The stars pecking at each night's darkness above your trailer would shine back at themselves in its metal, but they are too far away. The stones lining your path to the goats know themselves only as speechless, flat, gray in the sun. What begins and ends in the self without continuance in any other. You who stand at preschool fences watching the endless tumble and slide, who answer the mothers, which one is yours, with blotted murmur and turning away. Listen, any lack carried too close to the heart grows teeth, nibbles off corners. I heard one say she had no talent, another no time, and there were many without beauty all those years, and all of them shrinking. What sinks to the bottom of the pond comes up with new colors or not at all. We sank, and there was purple, voluptuous merging of purple and blue, a new silence living in the houses of our bodies. Those who wanted and never received, who were born without hands, who had and then lost, the Turkish mother after the earthquake with five silent children lined before her, the women of Beirut bearing water to their bombed-out rooms, the fathers in offices with framed photographs of children on their desks and their own private knowledge of all the hard words. And we held trees differently then, and dried plates differently, because waiting dulls the senses, and when you are no longer waiting, something wakes up. My cousin said, it's not children, it's a matter of making life. And I saw the streets opening into the future, cars passing, mothers with car seats, children waving out the rear window, keeping count of all who waved back. And would we lift our hearts and answer them? And when we did, what would we say? And the old preposterous stories of nothing and everything finally equaling one another returned in the night, and like relatives knew where the secret key was hidden, and like relatives let themselves in.